Anyway, they came to me. They wanted to put in a modern acetic acid plant in the plant up that I mentioned before at Cleveland Cliffs owned in Marquette, Michigan, where Kodak had bought their acid and which still made the acetic acid from in the old-fashioned way. And so I worked with them on that. They were going to use my process. We never sold the job, but I still went to Cincinnati. I spent like a week there and come back to Rochester, and they paid me a very modest amount and so on. It was a depression. People weren't getting much. Anyway, we did get the job then in Rowlett, which is near Cowdersport. And I persuaded them to use this process. Oh, a new process. Oh, meanwhile, while I was here at Poly, I developed a new process. The first process, ethylene chloride, based from the distilling column standpoint, based on the idea that I would have an excess of the entrainer in the lower plates of the distilling column because the entrainer had such a low boiling point it was easy to separate. So the upper part was removing the water, the lower part of the column was taking the acetic acid to the bottom of the column and letting the entrainer go up, separating it by ordinary rectification and sending the entrainer up to take the water off. The propyl acetate in my patent and what I said was I balanced the amount of propyl acetate in the column. Propyl acetate boils at the same temperature as water, you see. But the azeotropic boiling point is 82 or something like that, still a long ways from acetic acid. But I said the propyl acetate boils so close to acetic acid that if I get it down in the acetic acid, it's going out with acetic acid. So therefore, what I got to do is have just the right amount. So my patent on that, which I got and which then ultimately I sold to Kodak, was just the right amount. Meanwhile, I said, here, supposing instead of doing that, I use insufficient entrainer and let some water get down here because it's not difficult to separate, say, 90% water from 100%, 90% acetic acid. It's not difficult to separate the last 10% by rectification. So the lower part of the column, I will have doing that rectification, and the upper part will be doing its. So here I have insufficient entrainer. First, excess. Second, just the right amount. My third patent structure was based on insufficient. And I tried that out here in the laboratory and then in the pilot plant we built in Cincinnati. And then we built a little pilot plant in Rowlett in their old wood distilling place. And it worked, of course. And so we built this plant. And they then build the plant, this wood distilling, and I made so many friends with the people. They're such wonderful people that I ultimately went and built a very, very fine home in Cowdersport. That's another story. I won't get into that now. But let me tell you one incident while it comes to my mind. While we built this pilot plant in Rowlett, it was built with a sort of a junk equipment that Vulcan had in Cincinnati, and it was put together. It was not the best, but it could be put together and didn't cost anything, just the transport. And so we used that to demonstrate the process. And all the wood distillers came, and here was a tower going up there 50 feet from the ground, and all the wood distillers came around because we were trying to sell everybody on this idea, and not just Gray Chemical, which was the best financed of the operations and the best managed. Not just, but we were hoping to sell it. And these wood hickers from the various other plants would come around and look at that. And they said, up there, you're taking the water off, and you're boiling the water off up there, at a temperature lower than the boiling point of water. And I said, yes. I said, of course, it varies here because of this altitude. Rowlett is about 1,900 feet, 1,850. Varies. And so the sea level is different. He said, how in the hell can you boil it up there at a lower temperature than at sea level, way up here in the mountains? Anyway, let me tell you one other little story while it's in my mind. I took up two of my students. One was Bill Shurey, who was really my assistant here. And another was Jesse Bellett, another senior student, a crackerjack student, and those two came up and stayed with me at a farmhouse, which was a quarter of a mile away from the plant, and you could see you could see the plant from it a quarter mile away. Anyway, we had to operate this pilot plant to continuous. Bill was the older man. He never had any more experience, but he was a year ahead and so on. So he took the job at night and Bellett in the day, and I sort of spent time both times. Well, Bill was there a night, and of course this was in February of 34 or 35, I'd have to look up. Anyway, it doesn't make any difference. It was bitter cold. If you know the northern tier, you know it would be below zero, and I've seen it 40 below up there. Anyway, it was cold, and this night there was an icy moon, and it was just so cold. There was no snow on the ground, but it was just so cold. And I went to bed maybe midnight or so, and everything was going fine. And at 4 o'clock, the phone rang. And in this farmhouse, and my room was the two boys had a room, I had a room, but it was still on the first floor, right off the living room. And the phone was on the wall, an old-fashioned hanging phone on the wall. And the phone rang, and I knew it was for me. And I woke up as I was jumpy, and ran over. Bill Shurey go over at the plant. The phone rang. And I answered, and one of the operators, whose voice I recognized, of the plant, Bill's dead. I said, my God, I'll be right over. Well, I had my car parked right outside the veranda, and I ran out, jumped in the car. Fortunately, cold as it was, it started right away, and away I got over there. And by the time I got over there, he had come around. What had happened, they built this column up, but built just a wood platform, but then they built ladders instead of steps to go up, because you see they had to work all alongside the column. And some way or another, too much steam, some reason or other, the steam pressure may even have changed. I don't know, the boiler controls were not too good. But anyways, for some reason or other, the column puked, as we say. It went over the top, too much pressure, and it came over the top. He was halfway up. And we were working with ethyl tertiary amyl ether. Ethyl tertiary amyl ether was something that Shell Chemical had put out, and it was sufficiently higher than propyl acetate. And I realized, and it was free from the patents, which by now I had licensed to Kodak, you see. So we were using this, and it seemed wonderful, and it worked. Shell had supplied me with this stuff, and we'd got a couple of drums of it up there for this use. And the column puked, and of course most of the stuff at the top is always the entrainer, never entrains as much water as itself. And this had all come down, and Bill halfway up, and it showered over him. Fortunately, there was no fire.
Right.
But he half climbed and half fell from these several landings we had about 7 feet apart with crude steps of ladders up around them. Safety in that plant was awful consideration. Never anything like that would have been at Kodak. But he got down entirely out with this ether. And when I got there, he was sitting up against some of these, what they call the primary stills, in this part of the operation of the wood chemical plant. And I said, let's get back to bed. And he was three quarters dead, not dead, but three quarters out. We opened the big door that we had to get out, and sheet iron building. These were just sheet iron buildings. And we got out in this wonderful, beautiful moon, so cold. And I was half carrying him, and all he had on was, well, just like a laboratory coat, so to speak. And that was all he had on, over a shirt, and this was well below zero. I had of course put on a jacket, and he passed out. The shock of the cold air dropped on the ground. Mm-hmm. Slipped out of my arm, and here I was. I said, "My God." Now all I could think of was Bill and his father. His mother was dead. I knew the family. I knew his father and his sister. Well, the only thing, of course, was artificial resuscitation. And I went to work on him, on his ribs, and held his tongue. Then I had to pull his tongue up a couple times. And finally, and he was just breathing this ether even in the outer air there, there was no breeze, absolutely still but cold. Even in, out there, I could. And I then finally got him around and dumped him in the car and drove over, and we had no trouble getting out. I had no trouble then. By that time, he was able to walk a bit and got into bed. I couldn't sleep. He had another two beds, Bellet and Shuri, and Bill. But every once in a while, I would get in and I'd hear his awful. And I could smell in the bedroom. I mean, it's awful. It's not awful. It's ethereal stuff. Anyway, the next morning, Bellet and I went over and we left Bill asleep. He wasn't having any trouble sleep. And along about 11 o'clock or so, he came over and what happened? Well, I told him as nearly as I could. He said, gee, he says, I said, how's your guts? Oh, he says, I had a good breakfast. he was a wonderful eater, but he'd had a good breakfast. Mrs. Nichols had fed him well, and they had real country-style breakfast there. But anyway, he said, Doc, you see, my students, until I graduate, I'm always Doc. And then after I graduate, I'm Don. That slight change in the one, Doc to Don. He said, Doc, I don't understand it. He said, it was all in my lungs. He said, yes. I said, yes. He says, but why are my ribs so sore? Well, let's let it go. By the way, would you, we will, about this ether, while we're on. Ultimately, the plant was sold, we built it, everything worked well. One time, the president, after he'd been running for a while, months or so, the president called me here at my office and said, Don, we had a spill. I said, anything serious? He said, yes. He said, we had all of the ether we had left which have been specially made by Shell Development, or Shell Chemical, I forget what they called it then, and they had made it, and all of it, somebody turned the wrong valve and it all went down the sewer. I said, gee, that's too bad. He said, yes, and I called Shell out in California, and they said it wasn't on their regular program, and they wouldn't get around to making any more for several months, and then it might be a couple more months. He said, what do we do? I said, gee, Bob, that's wonderful. He said, what do you mean, wonderful? I said, well, you know, I've been developing something better and cheaper than and available. He said, for what? I said, to use instead of the ether. He says, oh, can we get some of that? I said, well, I think we can. What is it? Butyl acetate. Well, he says, yes, he was a forester, a wonderful guy, this guy that was the president. He said, yes, I think I've heard of that. They use it in automobile lacquers. And I said, yeah. He said, wonderful. How much should we put in? He said, I said, put in about the same amount, kept the same level in the decanter, and it worked just a little different, maybe 1 or 2 degrees different temperature. So anyway, what he called Buffalo and got, he knew somebody in chemical business up there, and they got shipped down that day some drums of butanol, and with the acetic acid, so you feed in butanol and so on. I'm not sure, but what the first time they didn't use butyl acetate to start, but after that it was always butanol. So anyway, that was the end of the ether, and of course after that we could thumb our nose at Shell Chemical. What I was, what I, okay,